Welcome to the Clarity Advisor Show, where you'll learn how to grow your team today. Join Ken Trupke and his guests as they discuss what works and doesn't work to grow your team in today's world. And now, your host, Ken Trupke.
Hello, and welcome to the Clarity Advisor Show. Hey, when you think about your business skills and experience, we usually think about applying those to a for-profit company. But have you ever considered working with not-for-profits to bring your talents to those organizations? Have you considered being on a board of directors or starting your own company or working your way up to an executive position within a large company? Well, my guest today has done all of those things and more. Dana Gomez comes to us with 30 years of experience in the financial and senior care industries in a variety of roles, from entrepreneur and co-founder of several companies to an officer at a very large insurance company. She has several executive positions throughout her career, including chief operating officer, VP of operations, AVP of business performance management, and head of distribution and customer relationship management and product manager. So she works now with not-for-profit organizations and startups to help their achieve missions. Lots of experience, lots of good things to share. Please help me welcome Dana Gomez. Dana, good morning.
Good morning, Ken. Thank you for inviting me on.
Oh, absolutely. It's our pleasure. You're very welcome. Glad to have you here. So, Dana, you've done all kinds of things as I just walked through. Tell me what you're working on now and who your customers are and what you do to serve them.
Well, thanks. Yeah, right now, the majority of my time is really spent with our non-medical senior care agency. We actually have two divisions to that company. We have a care management company and then a non-medical service company. And so what we do is we provide non-medical assistance to help seniors stay safely at home. That can take the form of direct assistance to the senior, like housekeeping or dressing, meal preparation, or actually assistance to the family by facilitating family care planning, securing services, or even medical advocacy. So the vast majority of my time is actually spent operating those companies, but I do very much enjoy my work with the nonprofits and other startups. So I that comes and goes and ebbs and ties, but yeah, I get to do both of those things, which is really great.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So tell us a little bit about how you got to this point. I walked through a lot of background, but what's the sequence of those and what led you into this senior care space where you've got these companies now?
Yeah, so that's an interesting journey. So my partner, Nora, and I had left our executive positions at a large insurance company, as you mentioned, back in 2013. And her through early retirement and me through a reorganization. I didn't want to relocate our family again, so we chose to stay here in Michigan. And that kind of led us both to, at a pretty young age, I'm going to say, having the opportunity to figure out what we wanted to do next. We didn't necessarily know what that was going to be, but we knew that we had had a lot of management experience, and we wanted to be able to apply that to an area that we really cared about. One opportunity led to another, and eventually we started a company called Managed Senior Care, and that's a care management company. Our focus in that company is assisting, advising families with care planning, securing services, and medical health technology. So I had a strong technology background, so we felt pretty comfortable that we could bring those services to the market. Through owning that company and operating it, we were connected to the franchise Seniors Helping Seniors. Mm-hmm. And so we ended up buying the franchise for here in West Michigan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Well, we talk a lot on the show about teams, building teams and growing teams, especially with the challenges of today's environment. So what does your team look like? How is it structured, and what have been some of the challenges that you've had growing this team and then incorporating the franchise since 2013?
Yeah. So our team right now is, we have an administrative staff of five additional people, in addition to Nora and I. Okay. And we are present owner operators. So we're there in the office too. And then our caregiving staff is pretty much about 100, fluctuates. Sometimes it's 120, sometimes it'll drop down to 90 or something. But for the last several years, we have about 100 caregivers that work for us.
Okay, great. And obviously you've had to go through the pandemic time. What was different for you guys? How did you have to pivot and maintain the team through that time? And what have been some of the challenges in the healthcare space, the senior living care space during the last 2-3 years?
Yeah, interesting time, wasn't it? So, you know, in the beginning, there was a lot of fear and concern, right? So we went from being a company that was, you know, chugging along with a certain number of care hours every month to having a lot of facilities tell us that we couldn't come in, a lot of families saying we couldn't come in. And so we had a pretty immediate drop of about 25%. And then things kind of started settling out. And then the dynamics also changed that we had more care needs. We had, our phone was just ringing off the hook now because people were coming out of the hospitals quicker. They couldn't move to rehab centers because there was no beds available. So our whole customer profile really changed up there in the beginning. We went from being generally people that just needed some basic assistance at home to being people that if it would have been pre-pandemic would have actually been in a nursing home. Of course, that happened at the same time that our caregivers were worried about going into work. So it was just a crazy time is about all I can say that I remember about that. We came through it. We have had more clients than ever by the end of it. We had more caregivers than ever by the end of it. But we were right in the heart of that question of, you know, do we let somebody come in? We're afraid and mom really, really needs help. So what are we going to do?
Right. Because the care that you provide, people go to the senior's home, right? Like you're going into people's houses. And that was very challenging for the last couple of years.
Yeah, we do. It's actually all of our work is in-home care. Now, okay. Sometimes that home could actually be a senior apartment complex, but it's somebody's individual home. So yeah, believe me, I know all about PPE at this point. I know all about disinfecting and the chain of contagions. But that was a radical uptick for us is to really deep dive into all that stuff because it really had not been our world before that.
Right. So tell me a little bit about how you maintained the team. What did you do culturally to keep people connected to you and to the company during that time? Because it was, like you said, people didn't want people in their homes. The caregivers weren't sure if they wanted to be in someone's home. It was a challenging time to continue to serve. How did you bring the team together and stay connected to them?
Yeah, great question. We communicated absolutely more than ever. And I tried to be as transparent as we could. CDC was changing guidelines pretty regularly. And every time they gave us an update or sent new information, I shared that with the team. Every time the governor put something out there, you know, I would communicate directly to the team. I have the ability to do I'll call it a mass text. There's probably a better name for it, but I can send a text to the whole team at any given time. So they get it immediately. They don't have to wait to try and find it, you know, at another time. But communication was key. You know, if I didn't know what was going on or where we were going, I said that and said, I'd let them know right away. So I think that was a big part. The other was we absolutely respected what their desires were as far as work. So if somebody called and said, I am too nervous about this, I don't want to work right now, we said, no problem. We will put you on leave of absence. And whenever you're ready to come back to work, your job is waiting for you. So we really respected the employee, what their concerns or their worries were, and made it very easy for them to come back whenever they were ready to.
Okay, great. So that sounds like you had a really ticked and tied plan and it was all very smooth. I'm sure there was some ups and downs in there. Can you give me an example of something that you tried that you thought would be helpful to keep the team together and build the team and didn't really work? What one of the mistakes that you made that we might learn from?
Specific to COVID, I'm trying to think about that. I guess let me just change that just a little bit right now. And that coming out of insurance, and my background actually initially in the very beginning was on the underwriting side, which is the risk analysis side. And very early on, Nora and I looked at this and said, this could become something big. We need to put a risk mitigation plan together for our company. And so I guess if I, you know, was talking from a management standpoint, being aware of the potential that something small could become big, and then laying out what that, what those contingencies could be. So we sat down, I want to say the first week of March, and we actually had analyzed our, you know, our revenue projections for if nothing changed and if worst case scenario happened, what would our communication plan be with our employees? Who did we need to bring in for resources and what additional information did we need to make decisions? So we actually jumped right in pretty early with an in-depth risk management plan. And I actually hear from the employees that they really appreciated that they thought we were overreacting in the beginning. But as life played out, that really inspired confidence and trust in them and us because they saw we were thinking ahead.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, the communication is always so critical. People tend to, and we all do this, it's not just people that we work with, but us too, fill the void of information with negative stories. We don't usually say, I haven't heard from that person. I'm sure they're just looking for their checkbook. So when I call them, they're ready to buy from me. We always fill it with, oh, they're not responding. They must hate me and they're going to go away and I'm going to lose the account, right? We always fill that void with negative. And so if you don't stay in front of the team continually, I love that idea of the broadcast type text where they can hear directly from you, everyone at the same time immediately. It's so powerful. And like you said, sometimes you didn't know. You just say, hey, guys, I don't know. And people appreciate that too. So that's all good stuff in terms of communicating as a leader. So take us back a little bit. You've had such a varied background and some really high level positions. What are some things that you did at any point in your career that really worked to grow and build teams? You've built lots of them over the years. What are some things that are kind of timeless truths that you found that work and you repeated over time?
Well, I think that, when I think about what works and is what has worked in my career, the word that comes to mind is partnerships. And I was recently at a conference over in Detroit, and one of the session leaders was Dan Mulhern. He's a professor out of Berkeley, and he has co-founded a company called Leading by Two. And his message was all about the great success of partnerships like Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak. And he gave lots of other examples, but his research put a stamp of credibility on what I have felt and experienced over my career. I think that our instincts and all of our professional development classes focus on teaching us the skills that we need to be great managers. And this creates, to me, a false expectation that each one of us is individually going to have all the skills necessary to be a good manager. I have not found this to be the case. What I have figured out is that what I am good at and what I'm not good at. And my most successful operations have always been whenever I brought in somebody else that had the skills that I do not. I know that I'm an analyst at heart who is comfortable leading, but that does not mean that I communicate empathy for employees that are looking for that kind of interaction and support with their boss. And so what has worked for me is when that skill is in my co-manager. Sometimes that has meant that my whole management team underneath me is the heart of our department. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's meant that it's the person beside me. And so that's what my current partner, Nora, and I do, is we're exactly that way. Tell you a little story. Years ago, Nora had been my boss actually at the insurance company, and she had gotten a promotion to Los Angeles. And I had said to our department executive at that time that I thought our approach as a company of promoting individuals was short-sighted, that her and I made a great team, and I was sorry we had been broken up. And this is not about friendship. It's not that I liked working with her. I did. But that wasn't the point. We were both successful managing together. And I think that careers and companies today and the way that things are structured is we don't really appreciate that reality of life, that often it's two people that bring up the whole talent suite that you need to be able to effectively run a department.
Yeah, I think that's right on. That's really interesting. I'd heard Dan Mulhern speak years ago about partnerships and was struck with the same thing. I know he's got a whole list of partners that some of them, I mean, the Jobs Wozniak one, most people are aware of that one, but he listed some other ones that I hadn't really thought about that were just as interesting, where it was, it's kind of that division that you're talking about, where you've got that analytical leader, decisive person, and then you've got the more people-focused person that has the empathy for the team and really connects with the team. And it tends to be those combinations that work really well. So we've talked about some stuff that's worked. I want to dive into the things that are kind of timeless principles. When we come back from the break, I want to talk about some things that maybe you think have changed in the last several years. So we'll be right back after this short break on the Clarity Advisor Show.
Is your business where you want it to be or on track to get there? Clarity Advisors helps business leaders improve communication and get your team aligned and engaged for greater success. We specialize in helping you streamline your sales and operating systems to improve efficiency and grow your profits. Call or text Ken at 616-822-2998 to have a complimentary 12-minute call to see what some clarity could do for you.
And welcome back to the Clarity Advisor Show. We're talking this morning with Dana Gomez. So Dana, we talked some about things that are kind of timeless principles that you found that have worked, communication and partnerships. What are some things that you think are different now in maybe the last few years, whether that be remote work or different generations in the workforce? What are some things that you've had to adapt to and would encourage other leaders to think about as they try to build and lead teams today?
Well, first, I'd say that I'm coming from a different perspective today of having a completely different type of team. My care team is made up of part-time employees. Their job fits into their life, and it's a means to an end. My job fits in a box, and we are simply not that important to them. I think this is different from a traditional career-building job. However, everything that I'm hearing from other managers is that this transactional mindset might actually be moving to what you used to think of as a traditional career building job. Even at one of my son's offices, all the employees are independent contractors, reflecting a transactional relationship between the company and the worker that was not there when I started my career at all. For me, what that has meant is that my work has to provide purpose, independence, respect, and a fair market rate, actually. So understanding, I think of it as the focus that you put into your customers and analyzing your customers and what their needs are, and this language that we use of the customer journey. I think today you have to apply that same perspective, that same thinking to your employees. What is the employee journey? What do your employees need? What do they value? And one thing I can say in 30 years of working is that was not the world when I started. And so it is different now.
Right. So how do you find out what's important to them? And how do you then deliver on what's important to them to keep them engaged in your business when it's, like you say, just more or less a means to the end for them, not the thing that they're all about, like maybe it was previously?
Yeah, I think you do the same kind of breakdown that you do when you analyze your customers, right? So what do they value? What is the value you add to their life? And you learn how to speak that language. So for us, that means that we speak in terms of purpose. And that purpose carries all the way through in the language we use in our company. So our performance objectives, our KPI reports, they speak in terms of how many care hours have we delivered? How many seniors have we helped? And so we want to walk the talk of what we say the purpose for our company is, and be clear on what the value is that the meaning of the work that our people do. So that was a learning that we had to make. Like I said, moving from a traditional company with career, PhDs and stuff working for you to a completely different kind of employee group. We had to cultivate a different language and then stay consistent with it. The other thing that I can tell you as far as kind of stories around what we've tried. So again, we came out of this major corporate world. And so we brought forward what we knew as employee engagement things, the things that always worked. We tried company picnics. We did museum days. We did caregiver appreciation dinners. And they just never really worked. So after really years of disappointing attendance, we said, we got to figure this out. What do they actually want? Not what do we think they want, but what do they actually want? And it turned out that financial rewards, like the Butterball turkey coupon at Thanksgiving, gas cards for taking an extra shift, reliability pay for taking a last minute shift, even a company membership to Meyer Gardens so they can take their family to the gardens, not go to the gardens with us, have proven to be effective. So deconstructing what it is that employee values, some of it's a learning process, but I would say put the same level of attention into understanding your employees as you do to your customers, and you're going to get there.
Okay. Now, are you doing that, just practically speaking, are you doing that by conversations with people? Are those regularly scheduled? Are you doing surveys? How do you draw that out of the team so that you know actually what they value?
Great question. We've done all of that, right? So I have done surveys, employee surveys. We've done the random, Survey Monkey kind of survey. I've had administrative staff call and just do a phone survey with different employees. We've talked to them one-on-one, just all of that kind of stuff. We have a feedback ability for them to send a note anytime they want. Our business is such that we do talk to our caregivers all the time. That's just kind of the nature of how managing this type of operation works. But yeah, all of those different styles, from surveys to phone calls and phone call surveys and just random conversations.
Okay, interesting. And do you kind of interview for this when people are looking to come in? Are you confirming that there's a connection and people are aligned around those values and how what you focus on and how you deliver? And are you checking with people as they come in to make sure they're aligned with that? Or are people just coming in and then you're adapting to who you have on the team?
Yeah, so great question. So with 100 employees at almost any given time, and turnover in our business, which we actually as an agency do great. We have about a 30% turnover rate each year. In this business, you have 65 to 75% turnover would be a typical thing. So we actually keep our people very well. But so within that context, I do a whole lot of interviewing and a whole lot of hiring. And so in that interview process, part of what we do is we ask questions of, what made you interested in this job? Where do you want to be in 5 years? Those typical questions. And it'll vary somewhat, right? Our company that we hire the most for is Seniors Helping Seniors. You can tell by that name that I'm hiring people over the age of 50. And so you get some variety of answers there. Every now and then, because of the nursing skills I need, I might go down below 50 and hire somebody younger, and you'll hear some different motivations there. But in that interview process, I ask the questions that give me a sense of what it is they're looking for and why are they looking at this job.
Okay, excellent. Good. That's all really interesting and staying connected to the team and figuring out what they want. I love the idea of thinking about your team the way you think about your customers and that you really want to understand them so that you can serve them better. Really powerful concepts. So I want to shift a little bit over to the boards. I know a lot of the listeners think about being on boards and it's still a thing that I think a lot of people are interested in doing, and whether that's a not-for-profit board or an advisory board on a for-profit business. Tell me a little bit about how you got into that role and what that's been like for you being on boards.
Yeah. Networks, quite frankly, I know there's a lot of companies out there that kind of advertise, they help you find board positions. I get contacted by them all the time too. Mine has been more local. And so the different boards I've served on has been through connections of people that I've known in the community, and they've invited me to apply to be on the board. So that's how that's worked. How have I enjoyed it? It's different. I tell you what, after being a manager in a corporation and then owning your own business, where profit is your measurement of success, to be on the boards of nonprofits, that's a learning curve. And then kind of to step out of that, being in management and being an advisor, there's a learning in that too. We have a great, a really skilled consultant that works with us over at the credit union. And he, every year when we do our planning meeting, he makes it very clear the board's role is to set strategic direction. The management team is responsible to come up with the plan to accomplish it. But I have actually enjoyed it a lot. It's a way to be in the community with different businesses and with different people than I wouldn't have been otherwise.
Okay, sure. Yeah, it's a chance to connect and continue to build your network. Have you taken some lessons from seeing other operations, seeing not-for-profit operations and some of the other things that you've seen through the board roles and connecting with other board members who probably have their own businesses? So what lessons have you taken from having been on a board that you've maybe applied to some of your businesses?
What comes to mind is actually what I was just talking about deconstructing the employee motivations. When you're in the nonprofit world, you just think about motivations and customers and return on investment, all that kind of stuff, just a little bit differently. So I would say my work with nonprofits really has given me a broader way to look at our for-profit business. And being that we're in a caregiving business, which is really, it's all about heart, the people that work for us have a heart for this kind of work. That, again, would be different than what I saw on the insurance side. So I would say that's the biggest immediate application is from the nonprofit side, learning to think more broadly about what the customer or the employee needs are. And I've been able to transfer that over then to the care management company.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, that's really helpful. So step back, if you would, scan the entire horizon of your 30-year career. If you had one piece of advice to give leaders, especially younger, newer leaders who are just starting to build their teams and think about becoming leaders, what would be your best advice for them, knowing what you know from having done all the things you've done?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm thinking about that. I can certainly think of the mistakes that I've made and the things that I want to do the same way again. I think that it would be about seeking out knowledge. So I have a few young sons that are early in their career. And what I encourage them all the time to do is to take advantage of the education opportunities that are out there and the networking opportunities, professional associations where you have, and then they've came back, thankfully, where you have a guest speaker at lunch that talks to you about, your industry and brings new pieces of information that you didn't know. I think that our tendency is to think that we can find all the information ourselves, so we don't actually need people. We don't need other resources. And with this remote work world today, that's so often the approach. But I very much found value before and would continue to do it today. And that's to be members of professional associations, seek out the advice of people that have done this job before, that have been in the industry longer than me. I don't want to call it networking because that can be a self-serving perspective. I just think that there's a lot of information that you gain by just interacting with other people in your profession. And I encourage young people to do that today. Make that effort. Get out to those events. Don't just think that a Zoom call is all you need to do.
Yeah, I agree 100%. It's so important to stay connected with people and continue to grow your network or your community. I found for two reasons. One is that somebody knows the answer. And you mentioned that there's people that have done what you're trying to do and can save you a lot of time and pain and are more than happy to share their experience and their successes and their failures, but teach you the lessons that you need. So if you reach out to people, they're often helpful and willing to help you solve that problem that you couldn't otherwise solve. And so it makes sense to just reach out to people when you need help and to get that help that you need. And the other reason is opportunities, that mm-hmm. opportunities, everyone I've ever gotten and anyone that I've asked has gotten is from another person. So if you're looking for more opportunities, which most people are, well, then you need to know more people. And so getting out and actually building relationships and I understand what you're saying about networking. It can feel self-serving and like you're there to give out business cards and make sure people know about you instead of you learning about them to bring value to them and build relationships. But if you do it well and you get connected in the community and start building a network of people that there's a reciprocal relationship there, it can be so powerful, not only for helping you, but allowing you to help others and then also to get those opportunities. So, well, Dana, this has been great. If someone wanted to reach out to connect with you, what would be the best way to do that?
Well, my LinkedIn is a good place, and I'm Dana Stimson Gomez on LinkedIn, and that's STIMSON. So Dana Stimson Gomez. There's not another one of me out there. And then the other would be our website. We are ManageSeniorCare.com, and any inquiry there gets right to me.
Absolutely. Great. That's fantastic. And we'll put those links in the show notes so people will be able to just click and get to you. But I appreciate that. So, and thanks so much for being here. This is really interesting. Always great talking with you and learning from you. The business that you're in is so interesting to me and the challenges specifically that you faced in healthcare over the last few years and how you've navigated that, especially with this part-time workforce. Just really some really, really helpful things. And I'm sure the listeners took some notes and may even want to go back and re-listen and get some notes. So thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me, Ken. I appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, you're welcome. So, and with that, that brings us to the end of another Clarity Advisors show. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Clarity Advisors show. Clarity Advisors is a speaking, training, and consulting firm specializing in helping you simplify your sales and operating systems to improve efficiency and grow your profits. Connect with Clarity Advisors today to learn more about how they can help you improve communication and get your team aligned and engaged for greater success.